Tony Lovato was far from home. Home was Blue Island, Illinois, a small city just outside the southern border of Chicago's city limits. Started in the 1830s as a way station for settlers traveling to Chicago, Blue Island grew alongside its older brother to the north. To trace the history of Blue Island is to trace the history of the second city itself. A feeder canal was constructed for the larger Illinois and Michigan Canal that helped bolster Chicago's status as a center of trade in the 1840s. It became the host to the car shops of the integral Rock Island Railroad in the 1890s. It housed breweries before the 18th Amendment and bootleggers after. And when a new musical sensation known as the blues swept up the nation, Chicago was at the center. But Blue Island got its own name check with a song called Blue Island Blues. Tiny Bardham was one of many who had a hit with the song. It's hard to know what someone like Old Tiny would think of Tony's band Messed, but what we did know was that the kids were liking it. Or at least they had been liking it. But this was 2007, and Messed was no more. And Tony, now living in Los Angeles, without a band, without a girlfriend, a stranger, in a dark, strange, underground parking garage. He didn't see his attacker coming, his ex's ex, Wayne Hughes, who attacked and scurried away, the coward. But Lovato would return, and this time he'd be prepared. For Better Yet Productions, I'm Tim Crisp, and this is Haircuts and T-Shirts. Depending on who you ask, the story of Tony Lovato is a tale of bizarre minor celebrity misfortune, or it's that of a ticking time bomb that finally went off. Long before Los Angeles, long even before Messed, Tony got his start playing as a drummer. At 13, he found himself behind the kit for a local band called Confederate Storm. If the band's name makes you jump, no, that it is certainly by design. The band was white power through and through. And that passive voice would be something Tony leaned on later when his past came back to haunt him while he was in the spotlight.
I lived in a neighborhood where you grew up. It was the crew that you were part of. And in order to be able to walk around and be somewhat safe, you had to be a part of a crew. It was like a community jail. You had to hang out with whatever race you are. The whites said to hang out with the whites, and the blacks hang out with the blacks. And that's the way it was in my neighborhood. In a sense, there were gangs in each corner, and that's who you hung out with. I was 12 years old. Who knows what you're doing at the age of 12?
The demographic shifts of Blue Island in the 1960s created a thick racial conflict just like that which was being experienced by Blue Island's big brother city. White flight and an increasing African-American population led to a nearly equal proportion of old white and young black. Lovato may have found himself in a defensive resistance at 13, but by 18, his embrace of black culture helped shape his musical identity. Messed's first album, titled Mo Money, Mo 40 Ounces, put them in the purview of Warner Brothers' imprint Maverick, Madonna's record label. Maverick would sign Messed and sharpen their image to capitalize on the simultaneous uprising of pop punk led by Blink-182 and the soaring popularity of bands like Limp Bizkit, whose singer Fred Durst had become the latest poster boy for suburban white kids cribbing black culture. Messed's second release for Maverick, 2001's Destination Unknown, would score the band its first hit single, a song called Cadillac. Well, I never do what I- Mess was on pace to reach the highest echelon of MTV-friendly pop punk. An appearance from Good Charlotte's Benji Madden on the 2003 single Jaded was a heavy endorsement, and Mess fans were happy to see Tony's face appear in several Good Charlotte videos, including that of the anthem, which went on to win Best Rock Video at the MTV Video Music Awards Japan that year. But Mess would always hover in the position of a lesser than, on the cusp of something bigger, but their brushes with stardom would remain just that, brushes. Bigger never came, and with little to fall back on in the way of a bass, the band would skip along the way, playing second fiddle to a continual streak of headliners, each less grand than the last. They'd drop off their 2005 tour with Social Distortion, leaving their main support slot behind due to drummer Nick Gigler's persistent carpal tunnel. A more accurate label for Mess slot would have been life support. Less than 3 weeks after Gigler had surgery for his nagging ailment, the band posted on MySpace saying that the plug was being pulled, and after a short headlining tour entitled So Long and Thanks for the Booze, Mess broke up. There's a phrase that was sewn into the fabric of 2007. It went, "Party like a rock star." It was the title of the debut single by Atlanta hip-hop group The Shop Boys, and it went to number one on the rap charts and number two on the pop charts. And yeah, technically the single came out in May, 2 months before Tony Lovato's Night in the Parking Garage, but Tony Lovato technically wasn't a rock star either. But the partying went nonstop. People say that rock stars party the way they do to combat the strain and the boredom of 23 hours of the day when you're not actually playing music while you're on tour. And for Tony, in his new home, there was little to do but party. Tony spent most days watching the sun come up, fueled on coke and booze. When he wasn't high, he could be found on the couch either sleeping it off or clenching with anxiety, unable to leave the house. He did find it in him to start a new band, Permanent Holiday. They posted a couple songs on MySpace, but things weren't picking up. The drinking and drugs were unavoidable no matter where he went. It was the life of Los Angeles and the life he sought. But even when he was looking for a break back home in Chicago, he couldn't go anywhere without shots being bought for him or a bag of cocaine being presented to him. Old friends had ceased to feel like friends. The new ones came and went, and so did the girlfriends. In 2006, he broke up with his girlfriend, Tiffany Selby, a model and future Playboy playmate. Soon, Tony found himself in an on-again, off-again relationship with a woman who was also in an on-again, off-again relationship with a guy named Wayne Hughes. Competition was fierce, and over the months leading to the major incident, Lovato and Hughes would get into half a dozen altercations. In the early morning hours of Saturday, March 24th, 2007, police were called to the woman's apartment. Tony and the woman at this point were exes, and Tony showed up in a rage, causing the woman to place a call to the police. Police settled the dispute without making any arrests, sending Tony off and having a friend come pick the woman up to spend the night away from her place. Police advised her not to return to her place without their assistance. The next morning, without police presence, she was back. Within a couple hours, so was Tony Lovato, and so was Wayne Hughes, who was waiting in the complex's underground parking lot. One could conclude that Hughes was summoned by the woman to lay a beating on Lovato for the night before, but one should also take into account that Hughes and the woman were no longer together either. It's possible that the scenario still plays out just the same, but whatever his moments, Hughes was there for blood, and he unleashed a fury on an unsuspecting Lovato in the underground garage. Fists hammering onto skin and bone, Tony had had his fair share of ass whippings, but this one's cruelty was acute on cold concrete. Tony was left to lay and watch the shadows, the screech of Wayne Hughes' tires bouncing on the walls and columns of pavement. Tony collected himself and left the cavernous garage, but he was greeted by the unrelenting afternoon sun. He sat in traffic, fuming with rage. Nowhere near the idyllic image he laid out only a few years prior. The top was up in his sedan. It couldn't go down. His tight grip on the wheel pulling him close. Sitting still, the smoggy air was circulating with little effect. His phone was ringing, but he wasn't hearing it. His grip grew tighter and tighter. Traffic was at a dead stop, but it didn't matter. He had nowhere to go. The phone rang again, and this time it finally registered. It was Hughes, with a summons to return. Los Angeles Police Department spokesman Lieutenant Alan Hamilton, when speaking to the press, would not say what the actual dispute was over, but said it was not two guys fighting over a woman. He also said the female was involved in the altercation. What it was that brought Tony back, we can't be sure of. But Tony returned to his ex's apartment. She was there, and so was Wayne Hughes. Words were exchanged, and Wayne Hughes asked Tony to step outside. Tony was tired. Tired of Hughes' constant pursuit. Tired of the altercations. Tired of fighting. So when Hughes again began to throw blows, Tony wasted little time. He pulled the knife from his pocket and lunged, sinking it into Hughes' chest. As Hughes gasped, looking down to see blood, his blood, pouring onto Lovato's hand as it withdrew from the wound, he watched as Lovato dug the blade in again and again. And again. Lovato walked from the garage feeling a cool wind. The only sound was the gentle breeze passing through the garage. He walked into his ex-girlfriend's apartment without saying a word, picked up the phone and dialed 911. "I've been involved in a fight, and can you come here?" Wayne Hughes was transported to Holy Cross Hospital and pronounced dead. Tony Lovato was arrested and his bail was set at $1 million. News of the incident swept through the mainstream and the punk worlds, but before anyone had the chance to get their jokes in about how Tony Lovato messed up, Lovato was released without charges being filed. It was determined that the stabbing was an act of self-defense. Lovato was free to go, but home still wasn't an option. Alone and struggling with the trauma, the next few years would be a haze. Mess played a show in 2008, though Nick Gigler wasn't invited, nor were the other members of the band who called it a day 2 years earlier. It was Tony and three hired hands. But with time came clarity, and Tony sobered up. And in 2015, Tony, Nick, and the other two guys rekindled the fire. They drop the top once more and ride home into a benevolent, forgiving sunset. Haircuts and T-shirts is a production, better yet, written and recorded by me, Tim Crisp. Edited by Tim Crisp, that's me. Our fact checker is Tim Crisp. Our executive producer is me. And you, our loyal pledgers. Thank you.
Thank you. belong. I never knew at all. Now the Queen of England, the Sunshine State, will have to wait. I found a home, I found a home on King Street. It's another world. Beauty dawns in the heart of Newtown, outside the coast's new world. It doesn't matter who I am, Maurice or the wire man on King Street. I'm a king.